The defeat of the Gibeon and the roar of the wild beasts. Moses 7:13. Book of Moses Insight number 12. The defeat of the Gibeon. A previous insight described how the Gibeon sorrowed and trembled after Enoch read their wicked deeds out of the Book of Remembrance and tendered the possibility of repentance. Drawing jointly on the Manichaean and Qumran accounts, Matthew Goff conjectures that the Book of Giants follows a set of Jewish traditions where at least some of the Nephilim and Gibeon are not killed in a flood, but rather have long lives. However, any conjectured move of at least some of the Gibeon toward repentance was short-lived. Eventually, when Enoch's enemies began to attack, they were roundly defeated, as we read in the Book of Moses, quote, "And so great was the faith of Enoch that he led the people of God, and their enemies came to battle against them. And he spake the word of the Lord, and the earth trembled, and the mountains fled, even according to his command. And the rivers of water were turned out of their course, and the roar of the lions was heard out of the wilderness. And all nations feared greatly, so powerful was the word of Enoch, and so great was the power of the language which God had given him." End of quote. As shown in the following translation by Edward Cook, significant details of the victory of Enoch and the people of God are echoed in the Book of Giants, including the mention of the wild man and the wild beasts. Quote, "I am mighty, and by the mighty strength of my arm and my own great strength, and I went up against all flesh, and I made war against them, but I did not prevail, and I am not able to stand firm against them, for my opponents are angels who reside in heaven, and they dwell in holy places, and they were not defeated, for they are stronger than I. Of the wild beasts has come, and the wild man they call me." End of quote. The roar of the wild beasts. The puzzling phrase, "of the wild beasts has come," immediately follows the description of the battle. The first portion of the phrase, indicated by brackets in Cook's translation above, has proven difficult for other translators to reconstruct as well. Thus, for example, Lawrence Duckenbrook renders it simply as two untranslated letters, RH. In other words, the RH of the beasts of the field is coming. However, Martinus and Millick, less conservative in their willingness to make a conjecture, respectively understand the phrase as, quote, "the roar of the wild beasts has come, and the roaring of the wild beasts came." Lending credence to their reading, the Enoch account in the Book of Moses has a remarkably similar phrase, quote, "the roar of the lions was heard." This phrase, placed in the nearly identical context that follows the description of the battle, is one of the most striking and unexpected affinities between Joseph Smith's Enoch story and the ancient Book of Giants. Brian R. Doak's sociolinguistic analysis reveals a convincing rationale for the author of the Book of Giants to have placed these references together, giving an Old Testament example where victory against an elite adversary, in this case a giant, and a prestige animal, lion, were also deliberately juxtaposed. Yet, while there was indeed a close connection in ancient times between a military victory and the roar of wild beasts, that association would likely have been just as unfamiliar to Joseph Smith as it is to non-specialist readers today. Nimrod is an exemplar of the wild man who hunted wild beasts. To better interpret the wild beast motif, the importance of royal lion hunts in the ancient Near East must be understood. Note first that the evidence for these practices goes back to the primeval times in which Enoch lived, as in the scene from Uruk shown here. About the significance of lion hunting in this milieu, Doak observes, quote, "Ancient Mesopotamian kings routinely bragged of their hunting exploits, the prey being exotic animals in faraway lands. The Assyrian royal lion hunt represents the apex of this tradition insofar as it has been passed down to us visually. Nimrod is one of the clearest biblical exemplars of this tradition. Described in the King James Bible, like Enoch's opponents, as a mighty one, Hebrew Gibor, and as a mighty hunter, Hebrew Gibor Said, his prowess in pursuing and subduing his prey was legendary. According to Robert Kawashima, quote, Nimrod's exploits call to mind the famous monumental reliefs of the royal hunt scenes, discovered at Nineveh and housed in the British Museum, and of the epic hero Gilgamesh, king of Uruk, who is immortalized in epic for slaying Humbaba and the Bull of Heaven, and for constructing the monumental walls of Uruk. In his biblical role, Nimrod is presented to us as a proud archetype of Mesopotamian civilization that would be satirized in the story of the Tower of Babel, and is even sometimes described as a giant. Quote, it should be noted that the post-biblical lore invested Nimrod with the giant status and associated him with the building of the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11:1-5, probably due to Nimrod's association with Shinar. Furthermore, the Greek translation of Gibbor as giant in Genesis 10:8-9 attests to what may have been a popular and not altogether illogical interpretation that Nimrod's stock as a giant somehow was passed through Noah, thus manifesting the hubris with which giants are often associated in his act of founding several cities and inciting the Tower of Babel project. End of quote. Of course, the brother of Jared, who may have been a contemporary of Nimrod, is also described as a, quote, large and mighty man, as were apparently many of the Jaredite people. However, notwithstanding the apparent might of men such as Nimrod and the brother of Jared, consistent with arguments made in a previous insight, it is probably a mistake to equate the Gibborim, mighty warriors, with the Nephilim, giants. Relative to Nimrod, Doka emphasizes, quote, the reference to Nimrod as the first Gibbor immediately brings to mind the earlier invocation of the Gibborim of old in Genesis 6:4, and it is noteworthy that the Bible provides here a prototype of all Gibborim in the figure of Nimrod. Though it is not clear that Nimrod is a giant, some lines of interpretation suggest that Nimrod was thought to be something greater than an ordinary human. End of quote. In brief, both Nimrod's status as a mighty one and a Gibbor, and his mighty hunter, Gibbor Tzayid, seem to depict him as a personification of the same wild man and wild beast hero ideals that Enoch's proud opponents strove to emulate. Moreover, the resemblance of Nimrod to the Gibborim of Enoch's day extends to their similar refusal to accept God as their master. Nimrod, like the opponents of Enoch and Noah, is presented as the spiritual progenitor of those who sought to make a name for themselves by building the Tower of Babel. In the Gibborim culture, as in the culture of heroes throughout history, quote, flesh is elevated above spirit, and the name of humanity is elevated above the name of God. In contrast to these heroes stand Noah and Enoch, who are unique because they have found favor in the eyes of God. They do not achieve a name through strength and power, but through their relationship with God. End of quote. Converging parallels in the ancient sources and the Book of Moses. Bringing the various threads running through ancient sources and the Book of Moses together, Joseph Angel provides an additional piece of evidence by pointing out the association between the wild man, the lion, and the tree stump in the Book of Daniel, and Nebuchadnezzar's twin inscriptions at Wadi Brisa in sub-northern Lebanon. Quote, these two texts sit across from one another on the facing slopes of a riverbed and are accompanied by partially preserved images of the king. One shows the bas-relief depicting Nebuchadnezzar battling a lion on the west side of Wadi Brisa. The facing bas-relief on the east shows him standing in front of a tall tree with no leaves, perhaps a dead cedar. In the accompanying inscription, the Babylonian monarch speaks of the strong cedars that I cut with my pure hands in the Lebanon. Despite differences in the details of these stories, Doak argues for the possibility of a deliberate convergence of patterns between the Nebuchadnezzar reliefs, Daniel 4, and the fusion of image of the humbling of the giants through dream visions with the wild man and tree stump motifs in the Book of Giants. Going further, we add the story of Daniel in the lion's den and the Book of Moses Enoch account to fill out the table shown above. Besides the ironic reversal of the roles of Enoch and his wicked opponents as wild men, as discussed in the previous insight, a similar turning of the tables is now apparent in the subjugation of the wild beasts to the God of the righteous Daniel and Enoch, rather than to their wicked adversaries. The same God who shut the lion's mouth to save Daniel from harm opened the mouth of Enoch to destroy his enemies through the power of his language. As demonstrated in the remarkable evidences described in this article, Joseph Smith's account of Enoch stretches ancient threads beyond Second Temple Judaism and into Mesopotamia. For those who see an authentic historic core in the story of Enoch found in the Book of Moses, such findings are not altogether surprising.